and donate your unwanted car, truck, RV, or motorcycle to KPFT. We'll pick it up. Your tax-deductible donation entitles you to KPFT membership, hair with luster, and teeth. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR, 1-855-573-8227. Details at kpft.org. Hair with luster and teeth may not be available.
Ha ha! Hey, you're like listening to 90.1 KPFT. Houston, 90.1 FM, KPFT, and stuff.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to another edition of Technology Bites.
Thank you. Hey, welcome to the show. This is Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Who else?
What's the matter? You don't hear me? You don't have me turned up?
Your mic isn't on.
Is it?
It's fine. NSA can hear anyway.
That's right.
I have it.
The people who count can hear.
All right. So great. We're going to rotate the mics around one.
See Switch. If, is this on?
This. Here is we this go. Loop de loop.
Yeah, we're here.
It's just like at your office.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So now we have the mics working. That was going to be too good because, you know, we had the great intro. We came right in. There was Pete. He's online. Of course, something had to go wrong. So.
But it's just like changing offices. You get a whole new
mic. Whole new view.
Whole new view.
Somebody else's germs. yeah, that's right. After many, many years at the same desk at my office, they moved me.
How far? Like down the hall, or is it a
just down the hall? I mean, I'm
in the basement by yourself. Do you still have your red stapler?
I still have my stapler, and I haven't burned them down yet. But we're consolidating floors because we don't have the need for as much space, so we're moving off of one floor and letting people fill in the spaces. But in order to get everybody grouped together in their different teams, they've had to accordion certain groups, so they've accordioned us into this other. I mean, it's the exact mirror of where I was sitting before, just the other side of the building. So now I look out my window, and I see
something else.
Yep.
I see 610 north instead of 610 south. So I've lost my Williams Tower view, which I'm not, because that's where all the good stuff happens. That's where smoke comes up and helicopters fly over.
People climbing.
Yeah, so my new window, I'm going to get to see more accidents because where people are heading off towards I-10 and down that way. So I get
that is a four-way stop.
It is disorienting when they moved me out into the newsroom, which I hadn't been in the main newsroom in like years and years and years. It was like, where am I? You know, what am I doing? I felt naked.
I'm going to get extra exercise because I'm going to go for my old desk.
That's what I was going to ask. Have you done that yet?
Yes, I did that.
I just moved today, but I know I'm going to come off the elevator and go the wrong way most times. So I'll have those extra few steps to work for me.
Yeah.
I'll be getting my jazzercise on for that.
Would you make the lap, like, if I meant to do that, or would you turn around and about face and do the walk of shame right back?
He'd go and sit down.
Go and sit down?
Go and sit down.
I don't think Laquita would like
this
that.
This used to be my desk. I'll be gone in a minute.
I go and sit down at my old desk from time to time.
Now, when you left your old desk, how much, did they come through and clean it for you, or did you clean it for the next person?
I took all my stuff, and I didn't have a lot in it anyway. I tend to keep kind of a minimalist desk. Everything is on my computer, so I really didn't have that much.
Did you have any gunk buildup of any kind?
No.
Do you have gunk issues?
I had a little bit of gunk buildup. You know, I just say there were spaces on my desk that had not seen the light of day for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. So I cleaned the whole thing up because I knew that the person going there would not want to, you know, see stray gray beard hairs laying around.
Now, the desk I moved into had gunk, and that was...
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like, whoever had the desk that I moved into... Now, it had been occupied by several different people over the years, so I don't know who's...
And it may be strata.
On the window.
It may be strata. It could be everybody's, yeah.
Oh, there's stuff on the window I had to get, like, I had to get an ex-employee's name... placard that was pretty, you know, it was like a ruler. Scraped the window. So, yeesh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How long have you been at your old desk?
Probably been there about 7 years, 6 or 7 years or so, maybe a little more. Been there a long time.
That's longer than most people are at their jobs.
Yeah. 12 years I've been there. It's come September, so. But it was all right. It's now I got a whole new thing to look out my window at. You know, movies kind of exciting, you know. Even you have that opportunity that, you know, it felt like, it's like, I went ahead and did the mental exercises. I was packing up my desk. It's like, okay, let's just not think about the fact that I'm moving. Let's just consider that I'm changing jobs. And I was like, oh no, all my stuff doesn't fit in this box. This is kind of sad.
Two trips.
Yeah, the walk of shame twice. Yeah, so... No, change is good, I suppose. All right, so anyway, you're listening to Technology Bites. We're glad you could tune in. I've got a working microphone, so I proved that with that long story. Visit us online at geekradio.com. That is our website, and it has, you know, mostly just podcast links, but it also announces when we're having geek gatherings and so forth.
Speaking of that.
We just had one.
Speaking of that.
Yeah, well, how was it?
It was good. It was...
good. There was something missing, though.
No, there was somebody with a straggly beard, but it was red instead of your... Pete said that we should... He wanted to go up to Mark Austin, of all people, and have him cover his face so we could get a photo and pretend like Flickton.
Flickton dyed his beard.
Yeah, so it was all right. The whole 80s Prince party thing was not... It was not intrusive. I mean, there were...
There
were a couple of interestingly dressed characters that went up to the food truck and so forth, and the weather ended up, again, being really nice.
Excellent.
A lot of the people that dressed up were actually in the bands that played.
Right.
Yeah. It was not very
Although
many.
Tiara was dressed.
The whole event itself did not look like it was all that well attended, but the bands and all.
It was pretty packed up. There was a lot of people.
Like I said, it wasn't intrusive at all.
They didn't affect us. No one came down and shouted nerds at us.
It's because they had a bar upstairs.
Yeah. So we had our normal space. And there was a DJ playing, and we had a good time. I just wish that food truck would get a quieter generator.
It is loud, yeah.
Yeah.
And the food, for the first time, Dwight finally ate at the food truck after wanting
after
a food truck.
Saying you were
it
going
was
to.
Good.
After
too.
Saying how much better the Geek Gathering would good. Be if a food truck came.
And then when it did, he didn't eat it.
Yeah, I know.
But it opens too late. Is the
and
problem.
Pete was there. So that was yeah. that kind of made up for the lack of afflicted.
Pete Jr.
And Pete Jr. Yeah. yeah.
So. Things went longer just because there wasn't like the thinning out of people due to the 80s party. Because, you know, before I knew it, it was like 11:30 and people were still there.
Yeah.
No one got the cues to like go home.
Well.
Which is good. That's, you know, no, Geek Gathering is a good gathering.
It was a nice gathering, so I was really glad for the turnout. And I was really kind of apprehensive because of the, you know, the cross-pollination between the two parties, and I was cursing Cone under my breath, but it all worked out. And then there was actually a third group that showed up that wow. was there to scope out the place for one of their upcoming events, and there was about eight of them.
Did you see if they wanted to do it on a first Friday?
I didn't want to go.
I'm just imagine here. You cursing Cone under your breath. It is like...
It's actually... Cone. I actually asked him how to pronounce his name.
And it's Cone.
It's Cone.
It's Cone.
Is it Cone?
He said Cone.
No, he said it's Cone. He said he that once before.
He's messing with us.
He's messing with everybody then.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. We pronounce it any way we want to.
Cajon.
I say Cajon.
Cajon.
He's the Linus Torvald or Linus Torvald of food delivery.
Linux.
Is pronounced shut up.
He's selling peanut butter sandwiches with GIF on them.
Choosy geeks choose GIF. All right, so we're glad you're here. Website, phone number is 713-526-573. Now, I do want to warn you that if you call the show tonight to ask a question, people will be listening in on you.
Other than Groovehouse.
Well, I mean, you're going to be broadcast on the air. Everybody's going to be listening on you. But there is no presumption that of privacy when you call into
there
technology.
There will probably be some spooks listening, or at least pale-colored people.
If you want to contact us securely, just Gmail us. Oh, no, hold on. Facebook us.
No, wait.
Yeah. Walk on up.
You know, please send your private key via email to Technology Bytes.
It makes me want to run my own mail server again.
I personally encrypt everything that I do and send over the internet and Route 26.
Oh, and I got that, too.
I use
52 is better.
I always use web keys. I feel safe.
I put everything on thumb drive.
I wept the bed.
Sticky notes.
I just put it on my thumb.
I write my password on my hand.
I write real small.
I write my password in reverse on my forehead, and only if people with mirrors can see. I read it. I have a mirror on my monitor.
I use FaceTime.
No, you don't.
To read my papers.
I'd like to apologize to any NSA field agents having to listen to this.
I don't.
It goes on for another. Yeah, actually, this is kind of what you deserve. You spy on American people, you're going to have to suffer.
I just feel sorry for the NSA goon that has to listen to all of our podcasts. Take that to the person who's listening to this one.
He'll be calling in right now.
No, he'll be calling in a few weeks. After they've gone through and caught up. They've only actually got up to the episode from like 2007 or 8. So there's a ways to wait for that.
So you mean they haven't figured out that we're very closely associated with Arab voices?
We're coming on after them. They're definitely still listening.
That's coming later.
Someone took a potty break. They're coming back on. We're on the air. They're going to stick around and listen.
Oh, yeah. We've been pigeonholed and set up for special screening. All right. So speaking of special screening, do we have... We do. I'm sure we do have a whatever that is that Pete does. An info shop. I was going to call it a Barrett time. No. Well, you know, I just saw Pete in person, so that's kind of like Barrett because I see him in person all the time. All right, so let's do the info shot.
It's the technology shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes.
I don't know. Maybe we need to change the name of the info shot to the Prism Shot. The Prism Show? That could work too. So, you know, everybody's heard about the whole spying thing, so I'm not going to go into huge depth on it, but this is just brilliant. This story I couldn't not cover. You know, so all that information is, there's stuff leaking out about the NSA program and the PRISM software and all this other stuff. So now there is a memorandum from the security director of the Department of Defense basically saying that anybody who works for the Department of Defense or the NSA should avoid looking at or reading any articles or news stories about the leaks. It doesn't go quite as far as telling them to put their hands over their ears and say la 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 when it happens, but they actually do say that it is the responsible. Let's see, where is it? Classified information, whether or not already posted on public websites, disclosed to the media, or otherwise in the public domain, remains classified and must be treated as such until it is declassified. It is the responsibility of every DOD employee and contractor to protect classified information and to follow established procedures for accessing it only through authorized means. So it means you can't, you're not supposed to, if you work for the Department of Defense and story comes on and they talk about it, you're supposed to, I guess, pretend it doesn't exist. And last week, this is just sort of odd synchronicity coincidence, somebody who was giving up an account, you know, where we talked about they had an old account with a free, like, mail service, and we suggested they just, you know, leave it, and then they could come back to it and use it whenever. Well, Yahoo's decided that they're going to stop the free riders. In a first-of-its-kind purge for the search engine, they're freeing up old IDs that have been inactive for at least 12 months. In mid-July, users can stake a claim on what Yahoo IDs they want to claim that have been in use. Yahoo will award the credentials in mid-August. Existing Yahoo users who want to maintain IDs need only to log into any Yahoo service before July 15th. Electronista has learned that the company is expecting to be able to free nearly a billion user IDs, including some common names. Requests for user IDs also requested by others will be handled by lottery. So I'm guessing like sexmachine@yahoo.com, that might come up. You could put in for it if that was something you were interested in. Let's see, and this one, I heard it first on, at the Geek Gathering, actually from Jay, but apparently Comcast is going to dump DVRs and go to the cloud. So they're going to have the recordings. When you record your stuff, it's going to be in the cloud and not on a local machine. So there's not, I'm guessing, no limits based on the hard drive. Although, is this going to be one of those cheap shot deals where they put it in the cloud and then tell you that you've used up too much bandwidth because you've downloaded because you're watching all your shows that you put in the cloud? It could happen. This is Comcast, so it's possible. And, you know, I don't know. It was launched Monday, so it's kind of hard to, you know, I don't know how far to cover the Apple hardware announcements. I guess the top highlights are, they announced a new Mac Pro, which has got a very different look. It's kind of a cylinder looking. It's a monster. The way they describe it, it is a monster. It has a 12-core processor, a single 12-core processor. It's got two GPUs. It has six Thunderbolt 2 ports so that it can drive three 4K. That's the double pixel from high definition. So just for reference, that means if you've got a 4K monitor, you could put your high-definition TV screen pixels, and they would only take up the quarter corner of the thing. And you could use the rest for, I don't know, Photoshop and your regular work. But the new Mac Pro will drive three of those monitors at the same time and render effects on 4K video. So you could edit 4K video with a new Mac Pro. The things that are a little bit different, you know, the things that might not be, you know, that depending on your point of view might not be so great. It's on the plus side, it's like like a quarter of the size of the big cheese grater box. The downside is it's all custom stuff, so you're not going to be able to just unplug a graphics card and plug in a new one. And it doesn't have all the slots that obviously the old one did. The idea behind it is more like the Mini and the iMac, where you connect external storage. If you want to expand it, you connect up stuff through one of the six Thunderbolt 2 ports, which that's, you know, I've talked about those the past couple weeks. Those are 20 gigabit per second connections, and there's six of them. Of course, three, I guess, will get taken up by your three 4K monitors. So there's that. So that's the Mac Pro. So it's pretty. The other interesting part with the Mac Pro, or I think it's in the if you have to ask, you can't afford it thing. They did not say how much it was going to cost. But they did say that if you're, you know, basically you're needing and looking for the ultimate, that this is it. And then in the other stuff, they released the new MacBook Airs with the Haswell processor. And apparently it's a little bit faster than the existing Airs. The price point is basically the same. But the big thing is 12-hour battery life. They're saying that you should get up to 12 hours on a single charge. The joke from the stage was that you could watch the entire Lord of the Rings on your MacBook Air, that you had enough battery life to watch it as far as by time. So that's interesting. And they also can't, you know, it's got the larger, you know, obviously they've upped the kind of RAM amounts. I think they lowered the price of the 11-inch slightly. But that's the basic one, the one that's got, you know, 2 gigs of, I think it's got 2 gigs of RAM and 128 gig, drive in it. So it's kind of that's kind of limited if you think about it, unless you just need something very portable and basic. And then they lowered the price of that one. I think it's much closer to $1,000 than it used to be. And then the other thing that came out is they showed the new interface for iOS 7, and it's kind of a controversial back and forth as far as what people think. The icons, people are happy with some of the icons and not so happy with some of the others, with the look of them. And apparently, according to Mac Rumors, well, and they highlight a story from the Next Web, that Johnny Ive, who was put in charge of software as well as hardware design, went to the Apple marketing and communications team to design the look and feel of the new icons. Then with those as a guide, the iOS design teams went to work. Quote, first of all, many of the new icons were primarily designed by members of Apple's marketing and communications department, not the app design teams. From what we've heard, SVP of design Johnny Ive, now head of human interaction, brought the print and web marketing design team in to set the look and color palette of the stock app icons. Then they gave them to the app design teams, who did their own work on the, quote, interiors with those palettes as a guide. There's just some real back and forth. Some of the stuff looks better, and some of it doesn't. Some of it looks kind of amateur hour, if I would be quite honest. The article does go on to note that the design is a work in progress, and the look and feel of the icons and other new UI bits are likely to change significantly as the beta proceeds. I guess they wanted to start with, it looking homely, and then they could make it look better and cooler as they had more time. And other interesting stuff for iOS 7. Apparently, Apple's going to add an activation lock, features as part of iOS 7. The feature, which functions as a kill switch, would require an Apple ID and password before an iOS device's Find My iPhone feature could be turned off or any data can be erased. So the idea is to protect for stolen devices. The keynote address at the Worldwide Developers Conference, the company said the same ID and password will be needed to reactivate a device even after it's been remotely erased. The same ID and password would still be required even after the SIM card has been removed from the stolen device. That's good news. As mobile devices become more popular, stealing them has become a unique sort of crime that has law enforcement and government officials taking notice. In New York City, a special police unit's been created just to deal with stolen mobile devices. So finally, you know, it's only the seventh version of the operating system, but they're doing something to not let somebody take the stolen phone, swap the SIM, and suddenly have, you know, basically use the phone and have it free and clear. This is going to make it a lot tougher unless somebody finds a way around. It'll make it a lot tougher for thieves to have use of phones when they get them. And then finally, this one is already an issue. If you have an iPhone, you need to be careful, because iPhones can auto-connect to rogue Wi-Fi networks. Security researchers say they've uncovered a weakness in some iPhones that makes it easier to force nearby users to connect to Wi-Fi networks that steal passwords or perform other nefarious deeds. Oops. The weakness is contained in configuration settings installed by AT&T, Vodafone, and more than a dozen other carriers that give the phones voice and internet services, according to a blog post published today. Settings for AT&T phones, for instance, frequently instruct the devices to automatically connect to a Wi-Fi network called AT&T Wi-Fi when the signal becomes available. Carriers make the Wi-Fi signals available in public places as a service to help their subscribers get internet connections that are fast and reliable. Attackers can take advantage of this behavior by setting up their own rogue Wi-Fi networks with the same names and then collecting the sensitive data as it passes through their routers. Oops. Not good news. The researchers tested their hypothesis by setting up several Wi-Fi networks in public areas that used the same SSIDs as official carrier networks. During a test at a restaurant in Tel Aviv, Israel on Tuesday, 60 people connected to an imposter network in the first minute. Ouch. That's Adi Sharabani, SkyCure's CEO and co-founder, told Ars Technica in an email. During a presentation on Wednesday at the International Cybersecurity Conference, the SkyCure researchers set up a network that 448 people connected to. This is at the Cybersecurity Conference. During a 2.5-hour period, the researchers didn't expose people to any attacks during the experiments. They just showed how easy it was for them to connect to networks without knowing that they had no real affiliation with the carrier. So, may need to figure out a better way to deal with that. And so, you may want to keep an eye out on your phone if you're in a place where you're. Where you might be concerned about what's going on with it. That would be another reason to make sure that all of your software on your iOS devices in particular are using HTTPS to communicate so that you at least get some protection if you go walk by one of these networks and your phone connects up to it automatically and starts talking. You want to make sure that all the communication that's going is as secure as you can make it. And on that unhappy note, that's the news.
All right. Thanks for the news. So Groovehouse is going to try to tell us something about this call, but you're going to have to do it on the air now. Do you want to like give us the...
No, we'll just let Mark do it.
Let Mark do it?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, should we start? Go ahead. In a minute. We'll do it. We'll do them in a minute.
Please. I just want to make sure everything goes according to your plan, Groovehouse. I don't want to upset you on your show.
It's your show. Please continue. I did not mean to interrupt.
Why are you holding up a T-Mobile card?
He switched providers.
You switched providers?
I didn't actually switch at this point because I want to make sure that it works at you know my main places I hang out.
That looks like a full-size SIM.
No, it actually is not. It's actually the micro SIM. It's not
if you
the,
look, there's a
but
cutout.
It's not the nano SIM.
Right.
It's the micro SIM, which is what the...
I know.
Yeah, it's not the 5, what
I
the
know what
iPhone
uses.
5 uses.
I want the maxi SIM that actually is big, gets the credit card.
The maxi SIM so you can go horseback riding.
Walk along the beach.
But so I went by T-Mobile and asked them some questions. And they have a pay by the day or pay per 24 hours. So so I got that. So I paid for like 7 days. Which don't have to be consecutive. It's just once you use your phone for 24 hours, you paid for those 24 hours of usage. And so I'll use this to put it in to check to make sure I've got coverage at my house, coverage at work, coverage at many places I tend to go. And then if all that goes well, then, yeah, I will probably switch over to T-Mobile and save myself anywhere from $40 to $70 a month.
With your current phone, you're going to take or are you going to get a new phone?
No, I have a
swap SIM.
I have an unlocked from Apple.
4S.
4S, yeah.
But the 4S won't talk on the high-speed
network.
It won't
do LTE. It'll do 3G, 4G, it'll do HPSA Plus or whatever.
It's still pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, the 4S doesn't have an LTE radio
right.
at all.
Right, so.
All right. Well, if it's okay with Groovehouse, we'll go to the phone.
As long as it's fine with Jay.
No. Yes. It's all about you tonight.
All right. Let's do this. Welcome to the Groovehouse Show.
All right. We're going to drop this platter, you know, and play this song. All right, Groovehouse, who's up?
All right. Up first on the show.
By virtue of being up.
By virtue of being up first. That would happen to be Mark.
Mark, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. I called you last week. My MacBook, my mouse was failing, my trackpad was failing. They wouldn't work. And, you know, I told you it was overheating. And you told me to, like, use the blower to, like, blow out the dust and stuff like that. And maybe I needed new memory because I watch a lot of Netflix. So I was going to, like, blow out the back of the fan and stuff like that. And I noticed that the battery case was kind of almost trying to push its way out.
If I had been here, I was not here. That's exactly what I would have told you.
Well, right, so open it up and the battery split apart and the battery is underneath the
trash. Happened to you, right? Happened to you.
Twice.
It's the Dwight Show.
You should have known that, Barrett.
Well, I wasn't.
Well, how would you not notice that?
So, like,
now,
the
I would have suggested that immediately. When I heard that symptom, I would have suggested that immediately.
Well, all right, let's go back in time. No, okay, so the battery was blowing up inside the case.
Right, right, and it was put. It's right underneath the trackpad, so like there was no function on the trackpad because it's trying to...
Putting pressure on it.
So did you notice that, like, when you had the laptop sitting on a tabletop, that it wobbled?
Not if it's expanding up. Right.
Does it expand both ways?
Eventually, it'll push down, but because you've got that hard kind of cover on the bottom, and the battery itself is kind of like this. It's kind of softish.
How old is the MacBook?
I'm just trying to redeem ourselves.
2009, so it's 5 years old.
So it's not the
not a sealed battery.
Not a sealed battery version, right?
Right, so, right. And it's splitting apart. Right. But anyway, I just thought I'd let you know what happened.
Well, so you can get that fixed, right?
Well, I think I get a new battery.
Yeah, once you take it out, if the trackpad works again, if you can plug it in with the battery out and see if it works, that should be fine.
Oh yeah, it does. But I'm running.
Does Apple replace those? Is that covered by any kind of Apple guarantee, even though it's out of warranty or anything like that, Dwight?
It may. I mean, if you take it in and show it to them, I think there has been recalls on some of those batteries. It could be your battery's part of that recall. So you ought to take it in to show it to them.
Well, I had Apple Care on this computer, but, you know, that only lasted like 2 years.
Right, right.
Well,
It won't hurt.
The worst they can tell you is no.
Right. All right. Well, I'll let you guys go.
All right. Well, thanks for the follow-up.
Bye.
It might help to get indignant in the Apple Store and start talking about how their products are shoddy and... They might be like, "Look, just shut up. We'll give you a battery."
Yeah, burn a hole through your pants before you go in.
Uh, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air during the Groove House show. I was driving through town. I heard this show. Yep.
Hey, can we talk about Snowden a little bit?
Sure. I would like to talk about
Snowden. Can we like a one-word response from each person on how they view him? Just one word.
Oh, one word.
And nope. We can elaborate later. I just want to get one word summary from each person.
I'm not going first.
Because, you know, words have get thrown around like
traitor.
Not traitor, not terrorist.
Terrorist, hero, patriot,
is there a hyphen in whistleblower?
Fame seeker, whistleblower.
No, it's one word.
It's one word.
Okay, awesome.
Whistleblower.
So there's some options for you. I'm just curious in a general sense, kind of where people stand, and then we can kind of flesh it out beyond that. But
I'll say flaky.
Okay.
Crunchy.
I can't just give one word. I would rather have a discussion.
I say patriot. That's what I say.
That's what I want to say, but what, Groovehouse, go ahead.
I don't know. I was thinking like British rock, and I was going to say Doves. They're a band, and they've got a song called Snowden.
There's also a band called Snowden.
There is a band called Snowden. Yeah.
Pete?
You know, I think that it was a positive thing that he did. I don't know that it rises to the level of, you know, patriot, but I do think that... You know, the sad part is this stuff that we've been talking about, these...
One word.
A lot of this stuff. No, sorry.
This is not one word, Pete.
What's your one word?
There's a lot of hyphens in there. Just put a hyphen between every word. No, the deal
word.
Is this kind of stuff has been out there since they passed the Patriot Act. and there were a lot more stories in 2006 in that. And so I would say anybody who's surprised when this pops up, surprised and shocked, has been, they've been living under a rock and not paying attention.
Yeah, the only thing for me, though, is that it's
are we going past one word now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that it's validation, right? I mean, because whatever that system, what carnivore, I mean, carnivore had already been brought up, and it did this sort of stuff, like collecting internet traffic,
Tempest,
right?
Tempest, lamppost.
And so, I mean, there was already kind of like this, it was kind of known that it was there, but this is like current, right? It's new information that nobody's denying is true, and they're actually saying, like, no, this is good stuff, and it's helped us. And somebody came out today and said, you know, they've stopped dozens of attacks with this information, and... Anyway, so I think it's good just because it's current. It's a validation
it
of what everybody kind of knew anyway.
And it starts a discussion that needed to be had and wasn't happening.
I think,
and
yeah.
should have happened when these bills were passed.
There were people, I think there were people that were discussing it, but they were considered fringe element. And I think this kind of like brought
this
it into
brings it into
like,
the light, 'cause that's the thing.
Yeah, it brought it into the public.
The reason I said flaky is because he is, there are certain aspects about his background and his past that make him,
his motivation suspect?
Not necessarily his motivations. Well, yes, partly his, I think he sees himself as, although he's denied it, I think he sees himself as a little grandiose.
Do you think he's got an Assange complex?
Not as big as Assange. Assange is like... Assange needs meds, but
I don't know. The pictures of his girlfriend surfaced recently, so I think he might. You know,
I saw videos of his girlfriend,
yeah. So he might have a leg to stand on,
so to speak. So, but that said, I'm glad somebody did it because everybody knows this has been going on at some level. The one thing that bothers me about the whole thing, and Jay and I were talking about this beforehand, is that a lot of people have fixated on the initial version of the Washington Post story in which Facebook and Google and Apple are, you know, allow the NSA to slurp data en masse. The Washington Post later backed off of that, and, you know, Google and Yahoo all said, you know, we're not doing what was originally said. But and
still, though, FISA, like the governing court that, you know, either rubber stamps.
Well, that has its own issues.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are fixating on the simplistic, which is, oh, they're slurping data based on that original thing. And there's more of a nuance there.
Yeah.
Prism is a Dropbox system. And even like Yahoo and one other company said, and Google said, we don't even do that. It turns out that what Google does is just a secure FTP site here, you know. So, and so there's been a lot, kind of a lot of hype as a result of, and a lot of buzzwords thrown around, and a lot of generalizations made in the as part of the discussion. When what's actually happening is a lot more nuanced than that, and that bothers me.
It's still happening, though. I mean that.
Right. Although, we should have had this discussion when the laws were being passed.
Well, I think part of it has to do with how much more to the internet society has thrown itself since then.
It affects people more. Like 10 years ago, if we had been saying, hey, they're reading the email, they're doing all this, most people wouldn't care because, you know, well, let's go back 15 years ago when it was, you know, still whispered about it and everyone kind of knew that it was going on. But people that didn't have email accounts or people that didn't put all their details out there, they had nothing to worry about. So this is the first time when I think everyone's pouring their information out there. And it's the first time a lot of people have something at risk, whereas 15 years ago it was a very niche.
But unfortunately, a lot of Americans are saying they don't care and they think it's okay.
The majority of people are saying
50% of people, 78% or something, said that they didn't care about the keeping phone calls.
In the interest of national security is what they said.
But then 52% said they were uncomfortable with email aspect. But to me, that's amazing. To me, I really mean it's like our culture, the American culture has been so scared of by terrorists and terrorism and all this stuff that like people are willing to sacrifice a lot of freedom.
Willingness to give up privacy and willingness to give up civil rights in the interest of security or being safe, it cannot be undersaid or oversaid. It's true, people have, and that was the whole thing that happened, you know, post 9/11. all of these laws started hitting the books about, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to step up so that this terrible tragedy doesn't happen again. And people right. are like, yes, I want that. I'm willing, because that's the whole, I've got nothing to hide, I don't care, protect me mentality.
It's just, I don't know. It's weird to me that people have that perspective, and that the government's perspective, and businesses as well, a lot of times, is that if something's, the easier something is to do, the more likely they are to do it. I mean, this is like capturing instant messenger conversations. That's the equivalent of somebody walking around following somebody with a tape recorder all day and recording everything they say to every person. Like, would people really be comfortable with somebody doing that? It seems, I don't think 30, 50 years ago, they would have been like, oh my God, are we in East Germany? Are we in Russia? Like, you know, we're communist system. Like, what's, no, it's not okay for people to walk around in a van following you, recording your conversations all day. But because it's so easy now, all you have to do is hit this button and you don't even, they don't even know what's happening. They can't see the van. It's just recording everything they say. And so that's okay. It's just.
Well, there's also the same sense of anonymity that allows people to misbehave online and act in ways that they wouldn't act in real life. That same mentality applies to the thought that their security is being, I mean, their privacy is being invaded. They think that they're anonymous online. They may think that their stuff isn't being recorded or their stuff isn't being monitored. And this event with Snowden shows that, yes, it can potentially all be monitored. The technology is there to collect all the data.
But there's also, to me, because some people say, well, one of the defenses or arguments I've heard is, well, you're putting your stuff on Facebook. All these people are putting their stuff on Facebook anyway. Everybody can see it. So what does it matter? People are giving up their privacy just by choice by having their email in Google. And I'm like, I don't see how that connects either, because if I put something on Facebook and I decide to make it public where everybody can see it, yeah, I chose to make that public. But I may go send an email to my friends with more details or with different information or whatever. And I'm not setting that to be public.
What's a reasonable expectation of privacy?
Yeah.
You know, just like searches and seizures.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing applies.
Yeah, and Barrett brings up, I think, the critical thing. You know, there's some real simple language in the Fourth Amendment. And the Fourth Amendment doesn't say, oh, well, you know, maybe. It says that your stuff, you know, your property, your effects, I don't have it right in front of me, but essentially that they can't take that stuff, like your phone records. Yeah, you don't expect that if they went with a court order to Verizon that your phone records shouldn't be handed over, but on the other hand, you don't expect that the government should be able to just walk by and go, oh, yeah, by the way, I want everybody's record from Verizon for the past 3 months, and to take it and have that handed over. It does not really fit in with what most people understand of the Constitution as far as how the government is supposed to act regarding these kinds of records.
It surprises me. It's somebody's comment I thought was funny was one of the defenses was also like, well, this is no different than – you know, somebody with the phone calls, the phone call records, they're like, well, this is no different than somebody seeing the outside of an envelope. You know,
right, if you can see who it's addressed to. There's a really cool article. Someone actually went back and did like some research on who was talking to who and who was meeting with who during the American Revolution. And just by knowing who frequented what pubs, you know, what meetings came out of those pubs, they were able to, without ever seeing what the contents of the messages were, figure out that Paul Revere was a revolutionary that they wouldn't have been able to find out before, and the whole American Revolution would have been thwarted. And that's the whole thing, is some of this is about having protection from the government, and they're stripping that away.
Yeah, it's big data and making connections through large amounts of data to find patterns. And it doesn't have to be about it sets up a system that I think is frightening, that can be easily abused by anybody in any point in time. And I don't know, to use it to say, well, we've got this body that controls it and it's all good. Well, it's all secret. And all of this is secret. Oh, we had public hearings. Well, no. I mean, the American public wasn't consulted on any of this. This was done under secret order. To me, it all sounds wrong. And then the whole, I don't know, this annoys me too, because the whole thing with, you know, the Obama administration being transparent and I don't know, like the whole thing of like, I'm seeing quotes, you know, of like things he said 2007, 2008 versus where things are right now. And it's just very different.
Well, he inherited a lot of this, but also
the,
I think
the largest problem, though, the largest problem to me, though, is, and the people that I really have no patience for are the ones who, you know, pick a side and start somewhere. The people who were upset about it when George Bush did it 5 years ago, if they're not upset about it during under Obama, then they're hypocrites and idiots.
Right.
And the people who were okay with it when Bush was doing it, when it started, and now it's Obama, you look at the numbers, there's a lot more Republicans who are upset about this right now.
Right.
And I think the reason is because they didn't think about it or care about it. I don't want to put too much on them, but they didn't think about it. They didn't think about the connotations.
Right.
And now when it's somebody they don't particularly support,
right,
then, oh, it's a bad
thing.
It's
like when it's a complete, when it's a completely partisan response and like, yeah, it's not based on the actual issue.
Has there been as loud of a partisan response to this that you've experienced compared to, say, like the tax scandal or any of the other stuff that's been going on in the last several months? I haven't seen as much partisan.
I think there's less partisan. I think there's more dismay. And I think a lot of people who kind of bought into the notion that this administration would be more transparent and more attuned to this type of rights and privacy rights are kind of doing a what the hell?
The talk was when Obama was coming in was, it seemed like his perspective was to tone down some of this where George Bush had kind of gone a little out of control with some of this stuff.
There was an expectation that some of the liberties we'd lost as a result of the Bush administration.
That's the way he
9/11
talked.
Yeah.
And the thing is, instead, he just carried on and extended underneath in the background, and now all this stuff is coming to light. And I'm not a huge Obama fan. I'm not a huge Obama hater. I don't feel either way, really. But it's just kind of surprising to me, based on what he said and where it is now, to be like, wow, this guy that was coming in, that won I think they gave him the Pulitzer Prize or Nobel Peace Prize a little early, not Pulitzer, Nobel Peace Prize, a little early, right? But like to go from that, and that's the perspective that people both outside the U.S. and in the U.S. have of you, to be like, you know, the president who's done all these like drone strikes, including killing American citizens, not on American ground, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, and I mean, yeah, just but to see all that have happened and come out is like surprising.
There was a good observation I saw made on Twitter. I sure wish I could remember who said it because it deserves being credited. But there was this statement made that watching Obama in the press conference about it after the leaks had come out.
Like to defending
it is that like he was somebody who was defending it but kind of knew better. That he kind of was defending it, but in his heart he knew that he shouldn't be.
Right.
And I think that probably is about the most accurate statement. I think I also heard on NPR a comment made that when you get into the presidency, you come in very optimistic, and then you start getting those daily security briefings.
And
that freaks you out.
One of my thought was, when you get in a position of that level of authority and you think, I have the responsibility of all these lives under me, like you start making compromises to your ideals that you wouldn't have made before because you're out of fear that you need to make sure you protect.
So the culture we find ourselves in comes from the top. Really, it starts from the top, and it's trickle-down culture. Because he's willing to give in a little bit. We're willing to give in, too, maybe.
And it's just sad. And it's been sad since September 11th because, I'll just say it, what a bunch of pansy, panty-waist morons when 19 guys with box cutters kill, yes, 3,000 people is a lot of people, but more people than that have died falling in their bathtubs since September 11th. But we let our representatives, and some people supported it outright, take all these things away from us and take away all this privacy so that we could feel safe. So we take our shoes off at the damn checkpoints and do all of those things to feel safe, and it's security theater. And I've felt that since it happened. I've said it since it happened. And I think it's just the problem is now we're getting real close to where, well, it's the new normal, so it's just the way we are.
Well, don't you think, based on, you know, I've watched going all the way back to things that were so patently obviously bad, like the Iran-Contra scandal. You know, going all the way back and thinking, man, it's in the news, it's out there, look, this is so bad. You would think that something would give, something would change, and you watched 8 years of Bush, and you think, oh my God, how can people just let this continue to happen? What we got now, what we have now, is it going to bring up enough outrage in people to actually affect the change?
But that's the crazy thing, right? Is you went from Bush, who people thought, well, he's a Republican, he's a conservative, he's from Texas. That's just how it's going to be. That's the way he is.
Pendulum will swing eventually. You
know, but now we've got Obama. You know, he's you know, for progression. He's a Democrat. He's for change. He's for hope. And it's like worse. I mean,
I think this is one of those moments. That's the crazy thing.
I understand that. And that's a valid point. But my point is that whoever's outraged, if it's everybody or if it's the people who support Obama or being surprised, whoever's outraged, doesn't matter. People are outraged.
It doesn't. But it doesn't seem like to me it's going to change.
Right, exactly. That's my point. Because Pete said the thing that struck that nerve for me was the new normal. So we're going to be up in arms, and everybody's going to be running around with, you know, throwing their hands up in the air, but it's not going to change. We're going to, now the new paradigm is that everything is being monitored. Everything has the potential to be read by the government. You don't put that genie back in the bottle. You know, even if Obama was to come out and say, you know what, this was bad, this is wrong, we need to undo it, we're going to get rid of all that data we've collected. We're going to have a big red button that says delete on it and push it on the National Mall
they're not exactly stopping the big build-out of the NSA thing in Utah, you know, the data centers. They're like, full on ahead.
That's okay. Some contractors downloaded it all to a thumb drive anyway, just in case. It's like the internet. It's the whole internet thing. It's like once it hits the internet, it's there forever. Yeah. The fact that your data has been collected by the NSA, that's forever.
Bruce Schneier, who's just like the Chuck Norris of crypto and everything digital, kind of weighed in on it earlier, and he said that Snowden was definitely guilty of divulging secrets. You know, it's part of the culture that when you take a job like that, you don't divulge secrets. You don't do what he did. But at the same time, before he's tried, you know, he thinks that we should look at all the facts, see just how deep-reaching it was, see if it was justified, that kind of thing. And even though people are having a really ugly, I think, treatment of Snowden right now, he thinks that the history books will remember Snowden as the guy that kind of did blow the whistle. And brought to light, at least, you know, for the majority of Americans, you know, that in a very public way that, hey, this is actually going on.
I mean, you never know what's going to happen in the history books, court of opinion, long term, right? But I feel like that he will be viewed positively, somebody that pointed out a flaw. And whether it gets fixed or not, it's still, I think, will end up being positive for being pointed out as a flaw in the ideal of what the American government should be and how it should behave versus how it is. That may create a new normal and say, yep, you know what, the American government is not this beautiful land of the free and home of the brave by the people for the people. It's not. That's not what it is anymore. It's something kind of tarnished and kind of dirty, and that's what it is now, and we accept that.
Well, also, I think it's showing us, too, the power of all the data. If you know, we're focusing on the fact that all of this personal data is collected by the government and they have it. Okay, fine. They've got it. But we still also have the ability of all that data connection to be able to, you know, somebody's taken this. If somebody 20 years ago had said the NSA had all of this, he wouldn't have had a podium to announce it on. There wouldn't have been that opportunity to have that information spread globally. Regardless of whether what Snowden did was legal or right or wrong or whatever, he did it, it hit the net, and it exploded, and everybody knows it.
The one thing that this, and the reason why I don't know that much will change, though, is the biggest gap I've seen is between people who are concerned about this and
the people
in political power of all parties. There's not a big split off of a bunch of Republicans who are saying, oh, this is terrible, this is another Obama scandal, you know, out of Washington. They all have circled the wagons and they're all facing out and saying, no, this is important and we got to keep doing it, and we don't care that we're sucking up all your information and all that with it. And that's of both parties, Democrats and Republicans that are supporting that. Even Al Franken.
There's a few outraged Congress people, but not many.
Not enough.
Yeah.
Even the dog's shaking his head.
All right. Well, this is a pretty good conversation to be had, and we would be happy to open up the phone lines and talk about it some more. We are coming up on the top of the hour shortly when we'll have to take a short station business break and do all that. So before we'll probably take calls in the second hour of the show, as I see the person who's on hold right now, and I don't think that's a short phone call at all. So, it's been an interesting story to follow. This genie is, it's interesting to see the topic of security and privacy hit the mainstream.
That's the best thing to come.
That and time will tell and show that, you know, the drumbeat has been getting louder and louder because your data, even if it's not being taken by the government and used for whatever the government's going to use it for, your data has the potential to be scooped up by anybody.
But to me, that's true, and that is an issue, and some people don't realize it. But the government having it is even scarier because companies generally don't have a police force and don't have the rule of law to do things to you that the government does.
No, but you also have the potential to get your identity stolen,
there's definitely problems.
I'm not trying to diminish
right,
that.
Right, no.
But the thing is that chances are we're not going to necessarily be able to undo the government part of it, but we can be more educated and learn about how to encrypt our data and protect our data and be better caretakers of our data and the use of the technology, because that's really what's got to change. So, you know, maybe there's going to be an opportunity for some private phone networks to come out you don't necessarily even have to use a cell phone. You don't have to send your data through companies. Like, we should, you know, one of the opportunities we might have here is to take companies like Verizon,
decentralized AT&T, communication.
Yeah.
And mesh networking.
Take that power out of their hands and come up with a secure way for us to communicate with each other using the technology at hand. All right. So it sounds to me like we got another 3 minutes? 2 minutes 15 or what? No, 3 minutes 15 before the break. All right, so but there's an opportunity here to assess how we're sharing data, and so perhaps those people that want to continue using cell phones and having all their information tracked by big businesses like AT&T and T-Mobile,
which will be about 98% of people.
But there's an opportunity to go back to the fringe where the people who care about these things will take advantage of the technology and develop a way for us to protect ourselves.
We're going to start teaching strong cryptography and encryption at the Geek Gathering. That's what we should do next Geek Gathering.
We're actually only going to speak in code at the Geek Gathering.
I'll speak
even the conversation will be encrypted.
Yeah, well, it's a great conversation. I'm glad to see that it's hitting the mainstream. It's this an opportunity for everyone to discuss privacy and security. All right, well, we're going to take a short break here and get out of your way. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after this short intermission.
It's time to let loose of that unwanted car, truck, RV, or motorcycle and donate it to KPFT. Your tax-deductible donation makes you a member of KPFT, and we'll have the vehicle quickly towed away. You can make a difference at the station that is the voice of our community. Support KPFT now by calling 1-855-573-8227. That's 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Or go online at kpft.org.
Houston's Juneteenth celebration at 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 19th in the Miller Outdoor Theater, presented by the Houston Institute for Culture. Performances from C.J. Sinier and the Red Hot Louisiana Band, Anika Chambers and Tony Simmons. Be there at 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 19th in the Miller Outdoor Theater. For more information, call 713-667-6650. That's 713-667-6650.
Thank you.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return you to Technology Bites.
All right, that was a very interesting intermission, if you're listening live.
Have we finished the countdown?
All right, we just want to make sure that all of our recording devices were in place and that our analysis team was ready to stand by and keyword search that last hour of the show. All right, back to Technology Bites. And
somebody is listening.
Allah, your baser belonged to us.
Hey, at least we know there's always at least somebody listening.
That's right. That's right.
We love you, NSA.
So,
whoa. Barrett time?
No.
He said there was none.
I already said no.
I didn't hear that you didn't have one. I just want to make sure. Right. Just try to stay on target. All right. So what were we going to say?
So I had I did a blog post today about Windows XP. And HP made this comment on Monday where they said they think that because when Windows XP goes end of life a year from now, in April 8th, 2014, it'll be a big opportunity to sell more computers because business will jump in. And one of the points I made is that when Windows XP goes end of life, there will be no security patches. And that means that if exploits are found in this operating system, Microsoft is not going to fix them. And that means that people who are running it essentially become bad network neighbors. They become bad members of the network community because they pollute the stream. And the reaction to the idea of running this insecure operating system in the comments in this blog post was, I don't care, I'm still going to run it. I don't care what happens if they end of life it or it has problems. You know, it never bothers me. And that is typical of people who don't think about security, don't think about the issue of being a network neighbor.
Yeah, other people. There used to be something called netiquette, you know, being a good neighbor, being
a good netizen. Yeah. Right. And that, people don't think about that. And one of the things that makes me glad about this discussion is that more of that awareness gets raised. Because this is security. Ultimately, it's security. And it's all kind of in the same ballpark.
But look at also the demographic of the people that are saying that. One of the things that you don't necessarily see when you're talking to people that are still running computers, running XP, is they tend to be of a certain age group, and we're talking like 60 plus that are saying that. They've
not necessarily 60 plus.
Well, my experience has been that people of a certain age group buy something and think that it should just, as long as it works, it should keep working. And it's a plot by Microsoft to sell us new computers or whatever by updating. They don't understand the march of technology.
We'll see what Microsoft does, too. I mean, if they still have an extremely large install base, you know, is it ethical for them to totally abandon all that? And at that point, they're not necessarily a good corporate citizen. You can point your fingers at all the end users, but if they've got, you know, 80,000 installations out there, even hundreds of thousands, they should step up and...
They already have extended XP's life several times. And in this story, HP said that between 40 and 50% of businesses are still using Windows XP. We still use it at the Chronicle, although we're starting to phase in Windows 7 machines. But, you know, that's, to me, that's irresponsible. And I think that that discussions like this on Snowden and the NSA lead to people being more cognizant and aware overall of security issues. And so for that, I'm grateful.
It'll be good
if
somebody
writes a... I think the longer it goes on, though, the more likely that those people, when their XP box finally dies or becomes totally unusable, that they will go to some sort of alternative thing like a tablet or a Chromebook kind of thing.
Or OS X.
And it is a security issue, but the issue here is not that the NSA is grabbing information off people's machines and hacking into XP boxes. It's that they're going to, you know, these large, you know, more or less where all the data goes through these pinch points, and that's where they're grabbing it from. It's not that they're, you know, getting into someone's XP box.
But the good thing will be when somebody writes... you know, finds a vulnerability that's not being patched, and so then they write an exploit that, like, infects the box, searches for other boxes, and then after a day or two, disables the networking.
Oh, it just turns
like,
it off.
Completely, like deletes the files for networking.
Now, it's a shame they can't do it, but if Microsoft had licensing to where you could have a third-party patch kind of, you know, marketplace come up, that would be nice. asking you to where you could subscribe, just like they kind of handed off antivirus for a long time. You know, there's no reason if they don't want to support anymore, there's no reason they couldn't let someone else do it.
But that requires giving third parties access to their source code.
Well, I think also you're going to see that the way people use computers and technology is going to continue to change. The idea of having a computer with an operating system and running these applications and stuff locally is going to slowly vanish, and everything's going to go more app-based and more internet-based, and there'd be a much better opportunity to make sure things are patched and secure if you don't have individual instances of things running. I don't know.
Do you see the MacBook Pro, though? It's a desktop computer. I don't know how much it's going to cost. Nobody may buy it because it may be $3,000.
Oh, you mean not the MacBook Pro?
The Mac Pro, yeah.
Yes.
It's Mac pretty Pro. Awesome. I want one.
It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be a lot of people that are going to buy something like that to send and receive email.
I mean, the current Mac Pros are very expensive, so I'm thinking it's not going to be cheap.
This will only be more expensive. That form factor is really sexy.
Okay, let's just change gears here completely. Mac Pro. During the move, we've done this huge purge of old equipment. Right, so we're getting rid of old desktops and old computers, and all right, Dwight, stop distracting the bear.
It's too funny.
We got the whole, we're going to get rid of all these old computers and stuff, and so in the recycle pile appears this Mac G5, it's a pre-Intel G5, and those things were. I remember we got this for the department that had it. It was not cheap. And so I took it out of the recycle. I cannot recycle this. I took it over to my desk. I put it up on the rack, and that thing is still as timeless. If you open it up, it's so clean. It's so nice. It's so heavy. It's so meaty. I don't know what I'm gonna do with it. I actually had to break into it because the user who had set it up, I didn't know their password, and it was actually kind of funny how easy it was to break into it. But, a little internet search, and next thing you know, I've reset the password for the user from a single user mode. But this thing is still a fantastic computer. So it really makes me
wonder. Yeah, those systems, they made a crippled low end for about 2000, but generally they started around 2500. Those were not cheap systems. And, I mean, they're dated now, but, I mean, they're still, like, I have one under my desk. I haven't turned it on. I mean, it maxed out at 4 gig of RAM. But at the time, that was a fair bit. But I had the crippled one, right? The really more expensive ones, ran 8 gig.
This will go to 16 gigs of RAM. It's 2.4.
So yours is like, probably a couple years newer than the one I bought.
It's a dual core, but it's still snap. It's still zippy. It still performs well. I guess I could run it all the way up to Leopard on it.
I think Snow Leopard was the break for that.
But this machine needs to continue to live on. But then I kind of get mad at myself because I talk to people who have these old XP boxes and old computers, like, you've got to move on. But when you look at this thing, it's like, I cannot bear to see it go to the trash pile. It's got to be preserved and keep living its life. Because you open it, it's timeless in the design and the way
They're pretty.
So clean. It's just incredible.
What we're trying to say is, like, total information security state, never mind. Like, when are the new MacBooks coming out? Have you seen the new Mac Pro?
Yeah.
It's conspiracy. They drop really cool hardware to take our attention away from what's going on elsewhere.
Ooh, shiny.
All right.
Yeah.
713-526-5738. We're going to take some calls now, and it looks like we're going to continue some of this privacy discussion with, sure, why not? We'll see how it goes. We reserve the right to hang up on him at any time.
All right. We're not going to hang up on him. The NSA disconnects the call.
Right. That's true. That's
right. Very true.
If the NSA thinks you're revealing too many secrets, they may just unceremoniously disconnect the call. All right, Groovehouse, who's up?
All right, up next on the second half of the show, we are going to speak with Scooter.
Scooter.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Scooter.
Hey, I couldn't throw away my Mac Plus either. I still got it hanging around. Anyway, the NSA, it's the red button. Record is the red button, so don't screw it up. And I wanted to talk about, you're talking about a history repeating itself, and so I'm going to go back to Daniel Ellsberg, who released the Pentagon Papers, and he was accused of being, a traitor and giving the enemy all kinds of information. But what was ironic was that in all those thousands of pages in the Pentagon Papers, there wasn't anything in there that the Vietnamese didn't already know. because it was basically a bunch of junk about how we were winning the war and the people were on our side, and they already knew that was crap. So there was nothing, there was no information that helped them at all. And I see that in kind of Snowden being kind of analogous, because I don't think that any of the people who are dangerous are not, I mean, they're already assuming that, you know, their phones are tapped and the internet can be traced.
I mean, we were having that conversation before we came on the air. I agree.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Before we came on the air. And I was just going to say, I agree with you because the one thing that stood out in my mind when I was watching the news coverage of it, this was some senator or another said, you know, that he needs to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law for revealing our secrets to the enemy or giving aid to the enemy. And I thought, you know, the one thing you can be sure of is that our enemy already knows we have this capability.
I've seen people say, talking about like, oh, that he sold it, which he didn't, but that he gave this information to foreign powers and all this stuff. And it's like abating the enemy. And it's like, but what he's talking about is, at least far, so far, everything I've seen, is not about us hacking into networks in other countries and recording phone conversations in other countries and doing things in other countries. Like, this is all about stuff in the U.S., right? And so this is recording stuff about U.S. citizens. So it's not really, it's not our enemies, except enemies inside of the U.S., but what's actually being captured and what he's revealing is about things happening in our own country, which...
It's a theme. It's like Ellsberg and Bradley Manning and this Snowden guy. All they're doing is educating the American public. Everybody else already knows. So that was my point.
No, I think that's a valid point. Thanks, Skater. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
No, that's kind of where, you know, I get kind of tripped up on the whole thing, is that if everything is secret, and you don't really know what the inner... If there's no transparency, if there's no awareness of the inner workings of the government, and we've already... It's already been proven, it's already been shown to us that our government will say... They will take the fact that 95% of the American people want something done about whatever, and they'll vote against it, you know, when we actually try to do anything. They're not representing the people. There's no transparency. So... When somebody actually comes up and gives us some, they're accused of being a traitor. They're accused of being disloyal.
Well, then people were. I saw some people were upset because he left the country, and he's a traitor. He should have done it here.
It wasn't safe for him here.
What was the thing? I'm like, think about it. If you're revealing secrets about the government, you're not gonna. First of all, why would you stay in the in a place where they can come pick you up? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, why would
Bradley
you do
Manning?
Because you disappear. You disappear, and now the issue is in their control to spin as they will. The other thing is, why would you release it just to sources under that country's control? Because, not saying that they would, but they could go in and manipulate, gag, whatever, you know, those. So what's the logical thing? If you want to reveal something against somebody, generally, you know, if you're scared of somebody who could kill you, you're not going to go to them and say, hey, I have a problem with you doing this. It's just because you're going to disappear. It's a good chance.
Right.
Maybe not, but there's a better chance you are than if you go to somebody else and say, I'm going to post this flyer. I'm going to get this other person to post this flyer up at their store that talks about what this person is doing. Right? So you're creating a little bit of anonymity for yourself.
Anonymity?
But you're also giving the information to... In this case, a reputable third party that's outside of the system, right? The Guardian. And then you're going to go somewhere else, so you're not immediately just scooped up and disappeared. And then all of a sudden, everything is controlled about how they handle. He still can talk right now. He still can deal with things. And he wouldn't
and
be able
to do
that.
And the conversation can continue to go on.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Bill.
Bill, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, thank you. There's another little information gathering playhouse besides the one out west. It's on the Ohio River, and it's called Design One. It's about a 5-story building with no windows.
All right.
And, you know, you're talking about the, you know, information gathering and all this stuff. You know, what about all these people during the Bush administration and part of Obama's administration that lost their laptops that work for private security companies that do all the security stuff for the government?
Well, there is a concern.
Yeah, a big concern of that. You know,
concern for government and for businesses and everything.
You know, because Boots Allen is one of the largest people, and they're a private company. They've been running the security since, I think, maybe Reagan. So, you know, what the guy did, I think, is wrong. But at the same time, I have to give him kudos for doing it because, it was so secretive. Plus, these private security companies are the ones that give out security clearances. And if you really want to find more about it, go back into the archive of KPFT to the monitor this last Monday. He had a person on with knowledge of the NSA and what was going on.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
All right, appreciate it.
Sure thing. Bye bye.
Well, like I said, the genie's not going to go back in the bottle, but I wonder what the end result will actually be. You know, what's the? I go back to what Pete was saying about the new normal. It's going to be, you know, we're already making jokes about it. We're already joking like the NCAA's listening, press the record button. You know, we're kind of being a little lighthearted about it, and I think that's the way it'll just get adopted into our culture.
Yeah, unfortunately. All that's going through my mind right now is I hope that what really comes out of this is that the NSA will invest in some PowerPoint training. So slides were kind of poorly designed.
Oh, I saw the redesigned slides. Those were great. Did you see those?
No, I don't.
Somebody
think so.
Redid the whole NSA slideshow for Prism.
That slide deck was straight out of the late 90s. I mean, really.
Your government at work.
So, yeah, somebody actually, here it goes. The graphic designer took the leaked the Prism slides and made them look much better. And there's a whole here's the slideshow. It says you can do what you want with your data, but not with my eyes. These slides are hideous. And they show the slides, and then seriously, and then it says, oh look, and then all of a sudden this looks way better,
much nicer.
Yeah, so if you Google, let's see, it's called Holly Allen and Chad Lorenz of Slate took a crack at it as well. But this one is, who is this one done by? You'll never spell
it. I even feel like if the NSA had interns, they could have produced a better slide deck. Like, don't they have someone that can hand that off?
Google search.
They don't have the security clearance.
Oh, yeah. Google search Prism slideshow, and then it's one of the first links that comes up, and it's brilliant. It's great fun. But yeah, apparently the slideshow that describes Prism that was created by the NSA is. That's something that we should find encouragement in, because it is a government agency. I mean, they're very good at collecting data, but how they disseminate it, or what they
acting on it.
Whatever they do with it, who knows? I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's nothing to really be worried about.
Seeing that PowerPoint, doesn't that make you wonder if that building with no windows on the outside is maybe full of Windows XP on the inside?
What I'm wondering, here's what I'm wondering, you know, with data leaks and information leaks kind of becoming more commonplace, you know, we're talking on the news about how many people have the kind of clearance that would allow them to get access to this kind of information, and how many, you know, they're talking about secrets, and then how secret does the secret have to be before it's considered to be a real secret or important secret? Eventually, some of the data points that have been collected by the NSA are going to fall into public, into, you know, somebody's hands, and going to be disseminated to the internet. Because say, here is the entire call list for Verizon for the month of October in 2012. That information is very likely to just fall into the public.
One pro side of this is that if humanity makes it long enough down the road and we're able to keep media around long enough, this could be like a treasure trove for future archaeologists. Like, they would know everything that was going on.
It would be dataologists.
Dataologists. All right.
Data miners.
Yeah.
Digital real data miners.
By the way, just one.
Hold on. Groovehouse wanted to say something.
Digital Indiana Jones.
Digital Jones.
Completely off topic, kind of not. Design. Everybody out there, keep listening to us, but go to your computers and Google Johnny Ive, J-O-N-Y, Ive, I-V-E, redesigns things. It's a Tumblr you must follow. It's hilarious.
Redesigns things.
The first one is... yeah, so enjoy that.
Okay.
What do you see, Jay?
Yeah.
Oh, that Coca-Cola can is nice. Oh, the Star Wars logo.
it's essentially the design. It's
everything converted to iOS 7.
Right.
The Breaking Bad one's upsetting.
The Breaking Bad one is good.
Spoiler alert. Oh, Lord.
Don't spoil it for me. I haven't been to the website yet. I keyboarded it, and guys are ruining it.
You know what's going to be the best thing that could come out of all this data mining and everything is that the government will just pre-peddle content back to you, so they'll take all that.
That's right.
And then we'll suggest contacts. You know, we noticed that you like to talk about this on your phone. Perhaps you'd like to have the contact.
Ooh, they could do matchmaking.
No.
Oh, matchmaking, movie recommendations.
Okay, off topic, not really. I saw, booking a flight to Ireland on KLM, right? KLM offers a service where you can provide them with your Facebook information, and they can match you up with other people on the plane so that you can go and talk, if you're interested, and go chat with each other on the long flight. Or, strike up a conversation. So there is kind of a matchmaking going on with flights now and using that. But I can imagine now the NSA saying, okay, here, you can talk to. These are the people you can talk to.
Y'all both seem to like to talk about left-wing politics and Barbie dolls.
MySpace is in the back of the plane.
Bronies in the back.
Bronies to the back of the plane.
Stay out of the bathrooms, please.
It also allows them to consolidate their targets, a little bit better when they do decide to take the bronies out.
Yeah, just watch. Everybody on the flight will be told to talk to the same person, and it'll be a guy in a black suit.
Why is this guy in all of our groups?
Why does he have a headset on?
Talking to the bundle of flowers he's carrying.
Talking to the tray. Oh, your recording device must be returned to its full and upright position.
That's the thing. With Google Glass about to hit the streets, all this is going to be moot.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. All right, Groove House.
Yeah.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hey, I got a Windows 8 machine last night.
All right. Too bad.
It's still in the box. Oh, it's pretty low. It's got Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and everything on it.
How have you not opened that yet?
I haven't opened it yet because it didn't come with any disks to reinstall it in case anything goes wrong.
You may not need them.
The Fry's guy said none of them do anymore. And actually, I called Walmart, and they said, no, they didn't have disk repairs either.
No, and here's what you have instead. Is this an HP, by any chance?
Okay. No, it's a Acer/Gateway.
Okay. All right. I think Acer/Gateway does the same thing. It has a separate partition on the hard drive that is not part of the main partition that has the recovery media on there.
Like the old Compacts used to do?
Yeah.
Yes, right. And okay. So it allows you to do it from there, and there should be a way within that. In fact, Windows 8 has this built in to do recovery disks from the operating system. So grab your, make sure you have a couple of DVDs or Blu-rays if you have it.
Or even a USB stick. I know Windows 8 will install on the USB.
Acer has a website. They talk about, and I don't know if this is current, but you might also want to check with Acer about it. There should be a tool. They have something, according to this website I'm looking at, called Acer Empowering Technology, and then Acer E-Recovery Management. But they have a tool where it will take that information that Dwight talked about and take you through the steps of making a set of recovery disks.
Okay.
But since this is
okay, are recovery disks the same as install disks?
Yes. Basically, what it is it's a set of software that, in the event that something happens to your drive, that you could reinstall on your computer to bring it back to what it was when you bought it. So it'll be all of the original operating system, all of the original installed applications, if they added any, which they probably did.
Like the bloatware, you mean?
Yeah, all the bloatware, all of that. It'll basically be just an image of what you have. But also, since it's a new computer and it's from Acer, you should be able to contact. Have you contacted Acer about this?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I would contact Acer. It might very well. They may very well offer you a set of install media for just Windows 8 if you pay like whatever the
$9
the shipping is.
Probably not, because Windows 8 is very non-disky. I think.
Is it?
Yeah. I think
if you wanted to buy Windows 8 right now and install it on a computer, is it a download or is it a?
No, they sell the discs at Fry's for like $115.
Yeah, actually, what I think you're going to get is you get a key. Is
fine.
A box
you get,
and a
you'll
key,
get some
and
kind
you'll
of
download it.
Okay.
I bet you that's not a disc in there.
Okay.
You think so?
Yeah.
So, like, you download it to a thumb drive or whatever?
You download it to a thumb drive, or you download an installer.
Well, regardless, I would if you're interested in having it, and I think it's a good idea to figure out what your options are.
See, the main thing I wanted is because I haven't used Windows for years. I've been on a Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to stick with that, too, but now that I've got Windows 8, I don't really want to throw the Windows 8 away. Well, I want to see what it's going to do.
The Acer program, the last Acer machine I looked at had that program as part of the suite that's included in Windows. And so you could just run that program, and it will create the disk.
Yeah, it says
for
it
you.
Should be there. It's Acer eRecovery Management, and then you just click on Create Factory.
Wait, I've got to write this down because I don't have a computer.
Turn the machine on.
Yeah.
Just Google search Acer Recovery Disks. You'll find it. But also take advantage of the fact that you have a brand new computer produced by Acer, and they offer you free tech support. So you can call somebody up, and you may have to wait for a little bit, but call them up. Say, I want to do this. How do I do it? And they'll say, well, you're a new Acer customer. They're giving you your serial number, blah, blah, blah. And they'll tell you how to do it.
Okay.
But, in my experience with any name brand computer, they offer you a way to recover. They put all that software on a second partition is typically the way they deliver it. And they usually provide you a utility that will take that information on that partition and give you a boot disk or whatever you need to be able to basically bring the computer back to the way it was when you bought it. Now, some of the more sophisticated ones have, like Dell in the past, provided an operating system disk. You know, whether they offer that anymore or not, or it's on drive or whatever. But they would offer you just a clean, pure version of the OS that you could install, but then you'd have to go and collect all your drivers and then reinstall all your apps. So what they do, what companies like Acer and even HP and Dell and all that do, they provide this recovery partition, which is just the whole shoot and match. So you don't really have the option to go back and just install Windows 8. You have to go back and install everything that came on that computer when you bought it. But every company does it a little differently. And to find, I haven't had an Acer in a long, 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 long time. Pentium 100.
Oh, wow.
Was my last Acer.
I've got a netbook, but it's just a little, 7-gig partition.
Right.
It just has everything up at the front. The main thing is that since it's a new computer, every second you don't open that box and take that machine out, it devalues. You're sliding into obsolescence
right now.
You've got to go play with it.
Yeah, I just got it late last night, and I didn't wake up until
that's
late today. Anyway, now one other question.
That's like going to bed at Christmas.
Putting Ubuntu on this dual boot, do you think that's likely to trash it?
I haven't done it with Windows 8 yet, but I would read up on it. Like, just go and, put in dual boot, Windows 8, Ubuntu.
I will go one step further and say that the need to dual boot these days is pretty much non-existent. I don't think you need to set it up as a dual boot. If you want to run Ubuntu,
run VirtualBox
or VMware or Parallels or something and run it as a guest OS.
Don't do anything at all until you back up and make your recovery
that's what I was.
But I know that Windows 8 and even Windows 7 has really good partition managers, so you can resize your partition if you wanted to and make room for an Ubuntu install and then boot up and set up the dual boot.
Is that on there or is that third party?
The partition manager is part of Windows now.
Oh, okay.
So you can actually
better in Windows 8.
So you can actually open up the disk utility and you can tell it, I want to take this drive and I want to pull it. I want to free up this much space. And so you can actually resize your partitions right inside the operating system. Whereas before you needed to have a third party program to do that.
But I don't need to do that if I'm running VMware or virtual.
Yeah, if you run your guest OS. If you run your OS, your second OS, as a guest OS,
as
virtualized.
Yeah.
So you could use a program like VirtualBox.
That's
what I use. It's free.
Mm-hmm. So you install VirtualBox on the computer, and then you launch VirtualBox, and it says you want to install a new app, a new operating system. You throw your Ubuntu disk in there, you run it off a CD or whatever, and it runs it as an application inside of Windows.
Oh, okay.
And you can also, but it also gives you access.
So it's like Wine on Ubuntu, but the other way.
It's not really like Wine.
Kind of, except you're running an entire. It's like you have a window in Windows to another computer.
Wine is not an emulator.
I'm sorry.
That's what Wine stands for. Wine stands for Wine is not an emulator.
Oh.
Like, it was never supposed to be like a full VirtualBox thing. The cool thing is, if you want to run Ubuntu, Ubuntu actually gives you free VirtualBox images to where you just download VirtualBox instead of having to install it in there. You just go grab your Ubuntu image and you're in business.
Yeah, you basically take this file, download it, drop it in the right folder, launch VirtualBox, and it says, hey, here's an Ubuntu. Do you want to start that one? You fire up that machine. And the cool thing about like things like VirtualBox, especially cool about programs like VMware and so forth, you can actually drag application icons out of the operating system onto your Windows desktop and just launch them, and they look like they're running natively in Windows. Anyway, go learn about virtualization and have a good time. It's a lot of fun to do. I actually have been having to set up VirtualBox to run Windows XP so that I can access some old tools that some of our finance people use.
I do that.
Oh, I hate it. But, yeah, it's just a necessary evil. I've got, I'm just not going to gen up a machine with XP on it, but I'll run it as a VirtualBox.
I think that's the bigger issue, not to like loop back. At least it's not the NSA conversation anymore, but with XP going away, the issue isn't so much that you've got users that just don't want to give up XP. In the business world, especially like small offices, I've seen a lot of issues where, like you might have a dentist office that runs something.
The
XP version costs a couple $1,000s, but now for the Windows 8 version, it might be $20,000 because it's not a widely marketed piece of software. It's very specific.
They didn't even make a version that runs on Windows 8.
Right. Got no migration path. They've got no way to do anything else. So
no, it's a tough call. You have unfortunately, because technology has been deployed and used by a lot of people, but not necessarily understood by the people who are using it. They've made some bad choices, or they've made choices that have led them down a dead end path. And as technology marches on, it's just not very forgiving of that kind of stuff. We've got some of our stuff is quite dated, and it's just not, there's really just not an opportunity to up. You can't throw, I mean, if you had all the money in the world to throw at it, you could certainly update all your technology, but it can be very, very involved, especially on these databases, which Barrett knows about what I'm talking about. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Before we do this call, I want to give out the phone number one more time, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, we've got about 30 minutes left in the show. I've got one call in the queue, but lots of open lines, and happy to talk to you about whatever you want to talk about regarding technology or the NSA. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Nuri.
Nuri, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How are you all doing?
Good. What can we do for you?
I have a quick question. I am still using a Windows XP machine, and before you guys come hard on me for using an XP machine, I do have a Windows 8 machine as well that I'm setting up. But before I had a chance to move my data, yesterday I realized I made two mistakes that when I was working in computer support, I used to always advise people on doing or not doing. The first mistake I made was I didn't back it up. And the second mistake I made was, in the rush to leave, I just turned the switch off rather than shutting down properly. When I reboot the machine after that, it kept coming up and sort of got stuck in a loop. It'll read the BIOS, and then before it goes into Windows, it came back, it made a little noise, and then it came back and reboot and read the BIOS, and then it made the noise and so on. So I figured, let me see, maybe I should just reinstall Windows. I don't really care for any setup files and what have you. And I popped the Windows disk in, boot from the Windows disk. When I came up, it showed both drives as unpartitioned. It showed the partition size, but it said unpartitioned.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked it up online, and eventually I disconnected the drives from the power cord and the controller cord. I unplugged those and then plugged them back again, and now it's even worse. Now it won't even boot. It in the BIOS, it shows that it has the drives, but it won't boot. And I'm just wondering what, if anything, can be done.
Well, one option
I'm going to try, if all fails, is just take the data drive out, and I have a USB connection that connects the drive through USB to any machine.
Well, you basically answered your own phone call.
I can recover it.
You've answered your own question. But
first thing is, don't touch anything else.
Yeah, it's really good. Hopefully this is your computer, not one that belongs to somebody you care about. Okay.
No, it's mine.
All right, so The issue is that the drives are not, you know, the system does not see the drives as being partitioned, which means that there is some kind of corruption issue with the actual drives. And it's probably hardware-based more likely than, you know, just being a, because it's not a corrupted install of the operating system. Chances are the data is gone. But whether or not the drives are usable or not, that's the question. But you say it's happening. Now, this is two physical drives?
Two physical drives, both SATA drives, 1250, 1500.
And they're both showing as non-partitioned when you boot up from a Windows disk.
Right.
So have you attempted to just take either of the drives out of the computer, connect it up to your external, and plug it into a USB to see if another system can read the drives?
No, that's what I just said. That's what I'm going to do if all fails. I figured before.
I don't know if you have to wait till all fails to do that. I think that's a very reasonable next step with what you have going on, because at this point, if you take the drive out and you connect it up to a USB port on another computer that you know works, and you still can't browse the data, if you've got data on there that you're trying to salvage, you can then load up a file recovery software that can look at that drive and see if it can get past the bad partition. I've had really, really good luck with that kind of software.
Yeah, I've used that recently. I've had to use a program called Scalpel, which you can run on Linux, and it just goes in and it tries to recover everything. I did learn the hard way. It takes a while. Like, mine ran on a couple terabytes. It took 16 hours, but it will create files. It'll create more data than you had. So if you've got, you said 750 gigs, you'll want probably like a 3 terabyte drive to bring those files out onto, because I had to like wait 16 hours and then like it ran out of disk space and the whole thing ground.
But what's good is that you can load that program up onto the computer. It can run its tests against the drive and see if the data is recoverable. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what programs should I use? What do you guys suggest?
Well, I've had really good luck with there's a program called EASUS Data Recovery, and that's EASUS.
Okay.
And if you Google EASUS Data Recovery, you can find their program. It's free to use, and it will tell you whether or not it can find anything, and then if it does, if you want to actually do the recovery, you have to pay to register it.
Right. Okay.
Mine's a command line thing, but mine's called Scalpel. And the nice thing about this is you can actually make an ISO of the drive, and then you operate on the drive just in case there is like any kind of a hardware failure with the disk. You're not thrashing the disks more as you try to get data off it. You're working on the image of the disk, which is and that's also why you've got to have, you know, 3 times, 4 times the space.
But it's also a command line.
It's a command line tool. You type in like just a couple. There's a config file. You type in a couple things. You more or less what it does is it's looking, because when you lose a partition or when you lose stuff, you don't actually lose the bits off the disk. Usually you lose like the things that define, hey, partition starts here, stops here. Here's where this file starts. Here,
right.
This, here's. So what it does is it goes through everything and then it does pattern matching to pull out all these kinds of known file types off of it.
Same thing, kind of
so,
thing
yeah,
with the
EASUS
does.
They
tell you, you can choose whether you want it to look for docs or images or whatever.
Although a lot of those are looking in contiguous blocks. So if you have a highly fragmented disk, then you're going to lose a lot of stuff because it can't connect the fragments.
See, the unfortunate thing is, as you said, it didn't make the backup. So there are some things you can try, but they're high risk that I've had luck with in the past. But this is if all else fails. I actually took a drive and F-disked it and removed the partition, and then I F-disked it and added the partition back, and everything.
If you do it without a low-level format and you get the geometry the exact same, you can actually rewrite the definitions to say partitions are here, and it won't mess with the data that's there. But if you get it off by a meg, even by a byte, it's high risk.
So, it's high risk, but
right, because how would you know how it was mapped before?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can figure that stuff out, but the thing is that once you do it and you don't and it doesn't work, there is no coming back. It's gone forever. So, but I've done that in situations and I've had some success with it. But again, like you said, I mean, ultimately having a backup of your data is the most beneficial thing you can do for yourself. But I would start, and if there's data on the drive and it's important to you and you don't have a backup of it and you can't get it yourself, there are companies that will do it. It's just very, very expensive.
Yeah. Well, you guys cheered me up now.
Well,
we're not cheering
it sounds
up.
Like I was hoping you'd say it's just some kind of a corrupt Windows thingy that's not finding the right...
it's unusual that it's both drives. That's what I don't get, that the fact that you have both drives appear to have lost their format.
Right.
That's why I think it's the next best step is to unplug them from the computer and connect them to another computer, because it may be something wrong with your SATA controller.
Could it be the motherboard? Anything in the motherboard that's bad? Yes,
absolutely. That's why I'm saying
get SATA controllers on the motherboard.
The next step is to start isolating things, take things out of the mix, and that's what taking those drives to the machine are doing. You're beyond a shadow of a doubt. You're removing anything that's in your current system from those drives to where if it's in the local.
Yeah, so you're not talking to it through the motherboard, which may be damaged. You're not talking to it through the memory, which may be damaged. You're not talking to it through the SATA, which may be damaged. You're taking this drive, and you're just connecting it to a SATA to USB, and you're plugging it into a known good computer, and it's going to look at that drive, and it's either going to see the data or it's not going to see the data. If it does not see the data, then you probably have a physically bad drive. Like you have the drive itself has been damaged.
In which case, refer to a company like the one you
mentioned. In which case, then you can still try running the data recovery, because even a damaged drive can be accessed by this kind of software that knows how to tell it, you know, let me see. But if it is, if that doesn't work, then yes, you're looking at a data recovery company, and you're talking about for like last 250 gig drive that I sent out to data recovery professionally done was a little over $1,500.
Oh my God.
So it's not cheap.
I'm in the wrong business.
All right.
Good luck, Nuri.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Bye. All right. Wow. Got calls in the queue and time's running out. Well, that's a good call. Data recovery. You know, hopefully we can just hope that NSA's all their drives will crash.
Call the NSA, see if they've got a backup on a hard drive. I bet for $10 they'll ship it out on DVD.
That's how the NSA could save face.
They come out profit center.
They will say, you know what? We backed up all your data for it, so
we're
you don't
here
have
to help
to.
You.
We were looking out for you. Look, here's
it'll be part of their thanks, NSA campaign.
Thank you.
Of course, they'll just inject it in the middle of your phone call.
I thought I lost all my data, but no.
The NSA doesn't want you to think Snowden's a hero. They're the hero.
Big Brother's NSA. Looking out for you.
Big Brother works for you.
Yeah, baby, really, I had to work late. And I'm like, no, don't listen to
them. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Greg.
Greg, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, nice to speak with you guys.
Thank you.
Question for you is, my wife and I recently discontinued our home phone service, and it was Vonage, and we were using it through the internet. And unfortunately, now I call my wife at home on her cell phone, and she's not in the same room, so no phones are ringing but that cell phone. Is there a way that I can actually hook up through the internet and my router to ring all the existing phones that I used to use, and I could easily put in a box? I'm just curious if there's a way to do this.
Do you have a Google account? This is just one way to do it. And Vonage, I guess since you gave that up, I knew that Vonage would do like a hunt group, but with Google Voice, you can actually go in, and even based on who's calling you, you can say, ring this phone for 5 seconds, and then go to this phone, and then go to this phone, and then go to voicemail. Like, you can do quite a bit of routing stuff. It's, like, on par with what, like, early Office PBXs look like in the 80s.
Although I think he wants to make the phones that are no longer connected to Vonage,
ring.
The landlines in the house,
the handsets
ring.
Okay,
right.
Now...
You can do that with Magic Track or something.
Okay, you can do it. I just had Comcast installed their new X1 service, which comes with phone. And I haven't actually used the phone, but I've done some research on this. If I take that phone from them and plug it into the wall to my modem and plug it into my wall jack, it'll light all my wall jacks. Mm-hmm. So does Magic Jack work something like that?
I don't know.
Magic Jack is like, he gave up Vonage, and Magic Jack is kind of the same thing, but cheaper.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, without some kind of service or device, you're not going to be able to make all the phones in your house work.
You could run your own PBX on Linux with Asterisk, but that's, you know, that involves some tech.
Okay, so now I talked to some other guys, and they said the alternative for them was use Bluetooth and a loud speaker of some kind, you know. I would love to use my old phones one way or another, but you're saying additional service, and I understand that. So I guess I can just get a loud speaker, you know, and ring the whole house.
Or a duct tape her phone to her hand.
I have suggested something like that, and she's just not like a guy where they'll have a clip on their belt, you know?
Definitely
all right,
not
guys.
Stylish.
Well, I appreciate it, and I kind of understood from somebody else I spoke to that it might involve another service. But I understand the masking tape, the duct tape, and the clip, so I appreciate your help, guys.
All right, well, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, that's the one thing about the cell phone that has made me like not want to go to all cell phone is that if this is not in the room where you are, if you've left it and it rings, you know, there's no easy way to get to it if you don't hear it, right? I keep my phone in my shirt pocket. In fact, now I will only buy shirts that have a pocket up here. But I just know I'm like getting this little ring of.
And as the phone gets lighter and lighter and lighter, you don't get that kind of lopsided look on your.
That's right. What's really fun is when I have the screen turned out, but to the outside, and it rings and it lights up my.
See, that's what my thought is that the that you know, we can get away from the telecoms. If we get away from the telecoms and our phone is delivered via the internet VoIP, and not through a central carrier. Like, you could have your own number, and so all your devices would ring. Because, like, all my devices go off when my wife tries to FaceTime me, because my MacBook goes off, my iMac goes off, all that. I could answer it from any, or my iPad, it's
all
there.
You saw that in iOS 7, there's going to be FaceTime audio, which is FaceTime without, it's basically Skype.
Mouth time.
In your face.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
See, we got a call in the queue. We've actually got time, maybe. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, we'd like to take your call. We've got one call in the queue. 713-526-KPFT Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who is it?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Eric.
Eric, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Jay, or everyone else. I haven't listened to the show in so long. I don't remember anyone's name.
That's all right.
Jay.
It's the Groovehouse show.
Groovehouse
show now. Where
changing
you been?
The guard.
No.
Right. Well, the one that said he only buys shirts with pockets. When you don't have a shirt with a pocket, maybe you need to invent press-on pockets.
That's a great idea. Should invent a case for the iPhone that is a pocket.
Leave
and,
press on.
And if you do get a backup from NSA, it'll be on RCA LaserDisc.
Along with the original Star Wars,
Please flip the disc.
Turn over.
My question is, I don't know if it's a question, it's advice. I'm new to Android. I just bought a PMP Koan brand. It's a South Korean. It's high end, you know, high fidelity kind of thing. It's all Android based. And even though it's got a decent PDF of the manual, I'm still new to the operating system.
Okay.
Is there something online where I can learn about it?
I'm sure there is, but I've only seen Android deployed primarily like on phones and stuff. So is this a phone or is it a tablet or is it
it's a phone.
No, it's a portable media device, PMP.
It's
music and video.
So like the Z2 Plinio?
Yeah, it's the Z2.
Okay,
so it's a media device like an
a Zune,
like a Zune
with Android.
It's not an iPod, no.
No. All right, so it didn't come with very good documentation?
I looked over the PDF. It probably has what I need. It's just that, in general, I'm not used to anything with Android on it. The phone I'm using right now is just a standard dumb phone, so.
Does it get online? Does it do Wi-Fi to get on the internet?
It can. I don't remember the password to my Wi-Fi router, so
But it can get online, so it can browse the web and do things like that. So
yeah, and internet radio and that kind of thing. Yeah, I think it has an app somewhere for VoIP.
Was it a really, really good deal?
What do you mean?
Like, price-wise, was it just a killer deal?
I don't know. I mean, it was under...
I wonder why you bought this. I mean,
Because I have an S9... On S9, I buy it because it can play FLAC files for one thing.
Okay.
I want my media player to be high quality. I've got.
So you bought it with the idea that you're going to, that's reasonable. I understand that. Okay. So
yeah.
That's what I was curious about, because it does not sound like it's a very popular device.
Very common.
It's a common device.
Relatively unknown in the U.S. It's popular elsewhere in the world. Okay.
And maybe with audiophiles.
Yeah, it's an audiophile device. They get high marks on the audio performance, but the deal is they went really conservatively on Android, and it's running 2.3.5, which is
okay.
Like I'm on 4.2.2 with my phone. So you're going back. So you're gonna, if you want to read up like on any Android tutorials, you can probably do like, you know, Android learning Android or Android tutorial, but make sure you put in like 2.3 because it's old, and then set your Google searches to only look for stuff from 4 years ago, or three years ago.
But
well, that's fine with me. Like I said, I don't have a phone that has any. It's not a smartphone to begin with.
Right, it's
so
not a phone.
Used to any of that stuff.
Does it look like it has the ability to install apps and things like that?
I think there was mention of it in the paper manual, but the paper manual is only 4 pages long. So
does it connect up to Google Play then, I guess?
No.
You can sideload Google Play on there if you can find an older version. I don't know if you know how to sideload apps, but people are sideloading stuff onto the Z2, it looks
like. Okay.
If you
I guess
that.
I'll look on some of the forums and on that.
I would definitely turn to the forums of people that are using this device. It looks like, I mean, does it do at least what you want to do in terms of, you know, storing your audio and playing that back? Have you got that sorted out?
I have it hooked up to the computer right now, but I haven't loaded anything to it. It had stuff preloaded and it sounded fine, but I'll be unloading all that stuff.
Right, but at least you can logic out how to load your own data onto it, or at least your...
Yeah, one reason I also went through this brand of player is it's drag and drop. I don't have to go through iTunes or something like that.
Okay, so you basically plug it into your computer and you can see it as a device. You can just drop files right onto
it. Yeah, right.
That's cool. Yeah, I don't know that, you know, I guess it really is going to be more based on what you decide you want to do with it besides play media files and how you would attack.
Since it has Wi-Fi capability, I'd like to at least be able to either listen to KPFT online or there's a Soma FM that I like too for internet radio.
Soma FM rocks.
Soma FM has an app for the Android. But
okay.
how would you get it onto something that doesn't necessarily have the Google Play Store on it, though? That's the problem.
I don't know.
Barrett might know.
Well, that's called sideloading. So what you can actually do is you can go and you can download it. Most Android packages come in what's called an APK. I think it just stands for, like, Android package.
Okay, so I saw that listed. I had no idea what it meant.
Yeah, you can go get those. But what you've got to do is, because they are generally binary distributions, you have to make sure that you're getting the appropriate one for the, you know, version of the operating system that you have. So you're going to be looking,
right.
Your keyword is going to be gingerbread. Most things that will work for gingerbread are going to work on the Z2.
I saw that mentioned on the boards, and I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah,
either,
the good news is a lot of times you can drag and drop it, or what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to get some kind of file manipulation. Like, I like eStrong for Android, and it's been around since gingerbread. So you get this, you know, you can probably even drop it, the APK file, maybe the same way you drop your music, and then you're going to move it over to a certain point, and then you can go and you can say, hey, I want to install this. And sometimes what you've got to do is you've got to go into the security settings on Gingerbread and say, allow installation from unknown sources, or allow, let's say it's under the developer settings to where you can actually allow, you know, non-Google Play software to be installed, and then you load it, and it's kind of good to go. Now, I haven't done this, like I said, it's been a while since I've done it on Gingerbread, but that's usually kind of how it is. So unless they have something locked and they say, hey, there will be no loading of stuff on here, which I think is not the case because I am seeing people sideloading stuff on here, you can go do that. And if you want to use a Google Play Store, you can actually go and sideload Google Play and run that. It's the other thing that's going to help you is a lot of the people that are hacking Kindle Fires, it looks like there's some spillover because the same way you can sideload, like, you know, Google Play onto the Kindle Fire, you can do it with Z2.
I don't know anything about it. I mean, I see people talking about, I want to get Google Play. It's like, I don't know what it is.
Start reading a whole bunch of stuff, and eventually what I would do is go Google.
Read everything.
Read everything. Go download the internet.
Start with the dictionary.
Yeah.
Right.
Google.
Ask the NSA. They
gingerbread
have a copy of it.
Android tutorial, and that's just going to give you a walkthrough.
But they have a copy of the internet.
They might at a later date.
No, that's the Internet Archive.
the way back then.
So I'm just curious, what channels do you like on Soma?
Let's see, Secret Agent.
Oh, that's good. Okay. I like that.
Yeah, Illinois Street Lounge.
Yeah.
What's the Groove Salad? Is that it?
Groove Salad, yeah.
Oh, and Suburban Goa.
Yeah, okay.
And if you also want another one to explore, check out Digitally.
Digitally Imported.
DI.
Digitally,
yeah.
DI.fm.
Oh, yeah, I know about DI and Sky FM, too. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, good luck, Eric.
Okay. Well, thanks for the help.
All right, you're welcome. Bring it to a geek gathering.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Definitely bring it to you.
So
yeah, it's a shame that all the reviews for that Z2, it says that it's the audiophile's dream, but it's great on playing all the codecs, it's great on playback, it's great on smooth video, but it fails in every other way. The screen, the design, the usability, the OS.
Well, if you're an audiophile, you're just listening to music, right?
Yeah, you know, so you don't care.
What it's supposed to do.
I mean, these are another, audiophiles still play records, so
another,
it's like, you know.
But another audiophile system, I thought, is the Sonos or whatever, the...
That's ease of use, but the fidelity isn't great.
But I thought
great.
One of those could play... FLAC media.
It'll play FLAC, but the thing is, especially because it's wireless, you're going to lose the audio quality. Whereas this thing, the sample, like it's playing nice. Okay. They put in nice, what's it called? I've got no idea.
Processors,
the codecs.
ADC,
the analog to digital converters, are bigger and faster and more expensive, so you get clear sound.
Nerds.
Yeah.
Nerds.
ADC.
Nerds.
Or DAC is the opposite of that.
Yeah.
All right, so Cyanide and Happiness has a great cartoon out. It says, they got the guy sitting in front of the computer, and he says, "Oh, wow, this NSA information collection scandal is horrendous. I'm going to send an angry email to the president." "Damn, I don't know where to send it to." And the other guy chimes in, "Just leave it in your drafts for him to read." "Hey, yeah."
There's also a great Tumblr, "Obama is reading your email."
Yeah, I saw that one.
Excellent.
I think the NSA could clean this up. They just need like a Clippy kind of, you know, sidekick. Where if you're like, you can say, "Hey, we see that you're trying to send a mail to your great aunt. You're getting her email address wrong. Try this."
There's that logo I was telling you about, the American Eagle.
Oh, that's awesome. Yet scary. The red eyes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to say goodnight to the NSA and anyone else. At least I like the idea that at least we know they're listening.
That's right.
So at the end of the show now, we can say goodnight to the
NSA.
They're
not factored into Arbitron, so
they're
it doesn't
not,
count.
No.
Maybe they'll make a donation during the fund drive.
Yeah.
Nah, they've been listening a long time. We have gotten no significant government funding at all.
And we never will.
No, because we're a bunch of liberal commie pinkos here. All right, except for Flicted. I mean, I didn't want to lump you in there.
Thanks.
I do need to be set aside. All right, well, we're so glad you could tune in to Technology Bites and spend this time with us. And it was a great conversation. And we will be back next week for more of the same or even better or something else.
Hopefully.
Depending. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Good night, NSA.
Good night, NSA.
Women Organized to Resist and Defend is a new grassroots feminist organization dedicated to building the struggle for women's rights and equality for all. The last few years have seen a shocking number of attacks on the rights of women through anti-abortion legislation, slashing of social services, and new heights of misogyny. Now more than ever, a new fighting women's movement is needed. For information, you can visit defendwomensrights.org. Throughout history, the gains that women have made have been won through militant struggle. WORD wants to revive this kind of struggle by uniting all women to defend our rights. Fighting racism, anti-LGBT bigotry, and the oppression of the poor are part and parcel of this struggle. No woman can be free while others are oppressed. You can learn more about WORD at defendwomensrights.org.
This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
Who needs the car and the 747 when you can't buy a Cadillac?
Go Green.
green and get rid of your old gas guzzler. KPFT will take your car, running or not, and turn it into a different kind of green. Money for the radio station. It's easy. Call our toll-free number at 1-855-573-8227 and let us haul away your vehicle and give you a tax receipt for your donation. Call now or go to kpft.org and click on More Ways to Give. We are listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston.